bottom of Vavamud Beis. Also, I'll note now that in 2 weeks we won't have the shiur on Sunday night. The Haggadah night that my Beit Midrash does with the Bayit got moved to Sunday night. We were supposed to be safely on Monday, but then they needed the Monday for something important, so now we're on Sunday. So we won't have a shiur that night in 2 weeks. So we were on Vav Amud Beis, at the bottom, and the Rava had made the statement that the issue of, or the possibility of having initial relations on Friday night, is a debate among the Tanaim, and he quoted two different brisos to support this, to suggest that in fact this is a machlokas already among the Tanaim about whether you're allowed to have relations for the first time on Friday night. Abaye replied that that's nonsense, that everybody says that it's not allowed, and the debate between the brisos was a separate point. It was discussion about saying Shema and what constitutes a distraction from saying Shema. So that was something we did last time. The Gemara then continued within the view of Rava that, in fact, there's a debate on this score, rejecting what Abaye had said and taking up Rava's position. And in the course of this, Rava quoted a view of Rabbi Shimon. He said, the view that says one is allowed to have relations for the first time on Friday night is the view of Rabbi Shimon, because Rabbi Shimon says, even if you're doing malacha, if it's not intentional, you're not going to be liable for it. To which Abaye challenges and says, yeah, but it's a psik reshe, it's a guaranteed result. And Rava said, it's not necessarily a guaranteed result. It's not so that you're necessarily going to break the membrane. It's possible to have initial relations without breaking the membrane. And the Gemara asked two questions so far regarding this, and we're up to the third. All right, is this all sort of coming back to you? Right? Ringing a bell? When you're off for a week from this, it's bad enough to do Gemara once a week. Doing Gemara every 2 weeks is hideous. But the first question that the Gemara asked is, if it's possible to have relations without actually breaking the membrane, then why is it that we said that the chassan is worried that he may not find blood? What's the concern? So he doesn't find blood. He'll just assume that it was a result of having relations and not breaking the hymen. So the Gemara's answer was, because we may be dealing with somebody who is not expert, does not know how to have relations without breaking the membrane, and therefore he does break the membrane, and therefore she's not a basula in fact, but he won't find blood, and therefore the assumption is going to be that she wasn't a basula from even before he married her, and even that something may have gone wrong between the kiddushin and the nisuin, she may have been involved with someone. That was the first question and answer. The second question was then, if it's true that it's possible to have relations without breaking the membrane, why don't I say that such people are allowed to have initial relations on Shabbos? Because you're not going to cause bleeding, you're not going to make an opening, and you should allow it. This was within the view that you're allowed to have relations on for the first time on Friday night, because it's not a guaranteed result that you're going to cause bleeding. So the question in the Gemara was, why not say that if you know what you're doing, then you're allowed to have relations for the first time Friday night, and if you don't know what you're doing, then you're not allowed to. Why not split it? To which the Gemara's answer was, most people know what they're doing. And again, we asked the question last time, I forget who it was who asked the question, but if this is involving some level of expertise, why do you assume that people know what they're doing? If it's his first go-round, why would we assume that he's an expert? And we don't really have a great answer for that. It's not at all clear. But the Gemara now asks its third and last question on this point, and it's really a very logical question. If you take a look on Vav Amud Beis 6b, we are 5 lines up from the bottom, and I'm going to share the screen with it unless there's a question or a comment on this, on what we've seen so far. No, we're good? Okay, so I'm going to share the Gemara. Again, Vav Amud Beis, 5 lines up. Okay. Amar le Rava bar Rav Chanan le Abaye. Rava, son of Rav Chanan, asks Abaye, Ela me'ata, if it's true that it's possible to have relations for the first time without breaking the hymen, so shushvinan lama, mapa lama, why is it that we bother having cloths there for him to wipe himself afterwards and for her to wipe herself and to check them and make sure that they find blood? He says, what's the point? It's possible that they have relations and that nothing gets broken, so to speak, and therefore there is no blood. The cloths are not going to determine that she is or is not a basula. So Amar Lei, to which he replied, Abaye responded, Shema Yireh V'Yovad. No. The concern is that if he doesn't try this alternative method, and instead he tries to have relations with her normally, and therefore breaks the hymen, and he still doesn't find the blood that otherwise the cloths would have caught, now there's going to be a problem, because it's going to turn out that she's not a basula, and you won't have any evidence that it came from him. The concern is you need to make sure that in the event that she stops being a basula, you find the blood from it. And that's really probably the best way that I can frame this. I'm going to stop sharing screen so I can explain, because I think I just hit on the best way I can explain it, which is, in the event that she remains with an intact hymen afterwards, then you're right. There's no point in having a cloth and nothing's going to happen on Shabbos, and all of this is true. However, the concern that we have and the stress that the Chassan feels is about the possibility that she will not be a basula after this initial act, and yet he will not have found blood. That's the overriding concern here. That's why he has stress and he's not saying Shema. That's why you need these cloths for that circumstance. Clear? Okay. The Gemara is happily done with this discussion of whether it's possible to have relations without breaking the hymen, and the Gemara is going to move on. And I second that motion. So the Gemara now, at the very bottom of Vav Amud Beis, has a brand new question. Going back to the idea that, remember, we started this discussion about whether you could have initial relations on Shabbos by saying that we have two possible concerns. One concern is that you make a hole in the membrane and that hole is considered desired and you want to create a permanent opening. And we said that's considered bona, that's opening. The other concern was wounding. So the Gemara here is going with the assumption that the concern is that you're making an opening in order to draw out the blood. And we assumed that you'd be liable for that. But Masav Rabbi Ami says, I can give you a parallel case of making an opening. Hamapis Mursa B'Shabbos. If someone has a boil or a pimple on Shabbos, and they pop the pimple, im lasos la peh chayav, if they do that because they want to create an opening so that this will drain over time, they're liable for creating an opening. Vim lahotzi mimen alecha, but if all they want to do is just release whatever fluid is in there now, they don't want this to remain open, it's just to remove the fluid that's there immediately. On to the next page, on Zayin Amad Aleph. Potter, they're exempt from liability. So you're telling me that there could be liability for him breaking the membrane because he wants to make an opening. However, where the goal is only to drain out whatever fluid is there right now, which is the case here, he's trying to just get rid of the blood, then you're exempt from any liability. And not only exempt from liability, but if you could see the Rashi here at the top of the page, Rashi says, Pater, v'kaimalan, pater umuter lechatchila. Normally, when you see the word pater in the laws of Shabbos, that means the act is prohibited, but you're not liable to bring a karban, there are no lashes or whatever. However, when you're in this case, the word pater means pater umuter. it's entirely permitted. So if somebody has a pimple and they crush it in order to get the liquid out, but they're not creating an opening that they want to have last, then they're not liable at all. The same thing should be true over here. That's the Gemara's question. That's the challenge here. Why are you talking about liability for making an opening? That's what Rava Bar Rav Chanan asks Abaye. To which not Rava Bar Chanan. Sorry. Say again.
Is that a malacha she'eino tzricha legufa?
So it's not even malacha she'eino tzricha legufa. You haven't created an opening. In other words, all you're doing is producing whatever the contents were that were inside, but it's not called making an opening. An opening, by definition, is durable. So it's not the malacha. That would seem to be the logic. So so if this indeed should be mutter, why is it that anybody's prohibiting here? So the Gemara answers, hasam pakid va'akir. Hacha pakid velo akir. The answer is because you're dealing with two different realities. The reality in the case of a boil, in terms of the fluid that's in it, is different from the blood in the case of the hymen. And what we're really doing here is very important. We're rewriting the assumption the Gemara has made since the beginning of this conversation about having initial relations on Shabbos. We started out with the assumption that one of two realities exists regarding the blood. Either the blood is dammed up behind the membrane and it's just waiting for there to be a hole and then it's going to come out, or the blood is absorbed inside the membrane, and when you break the membrane itself oozes out blood. Those were our two assumptions. The Gemara here says, actually, it's not like that. It's not a neat split. I'll share the Gemara again so we can all look at that together. Hasam pakid va'akir. Hacha pakid velo akir. Hasam, in the case of the pimple, in the case of the boil, pakid, the blood is stored up, va'akir, and it all gets uprooted. You open up the boil, all the pus just comes out. The hacha, I hope people ate their dinner like a long time ago. The hacha, whereas in the case that we're talking about here, in the case of the blood, so pakid, it's stored up, velo akir. But it doesn't come out entirely, meaning some of it is absorbed in the walls, and therefore it's not going to come out right away. Even within the view that it is mifkad pakid, that it's stored up, nonetheless, some of it, meaning sort of behind the membrane, some of it is actually absorbed in the flesh there, and therefore it's not analogous to the case of the pimple where you just crush it and everything comes out. That's not the same thing, and therefore, the blood is considered to be joined with the flesh that's in there, and therefore we have a wounding concern. That's the difference. So don't ask me questions based on the case of the pimple. And then the Gemara says,
were we going on the assumption before that it was the other way, that it was blood was collected behind, and then now we're changing it?
So yes, we're adjusting that idea. This was within that view that it was stored behind, and the only issue was an issue of bonnet. We're now saying not necessarily. The bonnet view also has chovel, also has a wounding concern. That seems to be where we're going with it. We then get two rulings about initial relations on Shabbos that conclude this piece of the discussion. Rabbi Ami, second line. Rabbi Ami shara lemivel betchila b'Shabbos. Rabbi Ami permitted a case in which they asked him, can we have initial relations on Shabbos? He said, yes. Amri le Rabbanan, to which the Rabbanan said, Vaha lo ksiva ksubasa. The ksuba is not actually written yet. I guess this was on Shabbos that the question is being asked, and they don't have a ksuba. Without a ksuba, they're forbidden to each other. Sa amar lehu aspesuha mitaltalin. So his answer was, give her movable items, And let that be, as Rashi says here, Tnula metaltlin tachas yada b'mashkon, l'shibud ksubasa. Let it be a collateral against the ksuba until you could actually take care of the writing the ksuba document. This will do. So the issue of the ksuba being written against movable items, land, or whatever, is a discussion we're going to have to come back to eventually in Maseches Ksuvos. But right now, the only reason this is mentioned here is because Rabbi Ami said they were allowed to have initial relations on Shabbos. We've seesawed back and forth so many times at this point in terms of whether you're allowed to have initial relations on Shabbos or not. We had Rav and Shmuel quoted as saying it's permitted. We had Rava saying it's actually a machlokes tanoim. Now we have Rabbi Ami saying it's permitted. And then one more, Rav Zvid shara lemivo b'tchila b'Shabbos. Rav Zvid said they're allowed to have initial relations on Shabbos, Ika de Amri, or some had it as Rav Zvid Gufei, Baal B'tchila B'Shabbos, that Rav Zvid actually did this. When he got married, he had initial relations on Shabbos. It wasn't he permitted it for somebody else, it was that he did it himself. Okay.
Rabbi Teshinach?
Yes.
You may have answered this question sometime in the last 6 months that we've been learning, but can you get married without your kasuba being in place?
So that's something that the Gemara is going to get to later. I think I may have introduced it briefly when we started the Masechta, and I talked a little bit about what a ksuba is. But the ksuba at its core is a debt that the man takes on. He owes his wife money, which will have to be paid by the end of the marriage, unless she predeceases him, in which case he's getting it back from her. That's what the ksuba is. It's really not written, so to speak. It's simply an obligation to pay her something. The fact that we write it down is what gives it the title of a ksuba. That's why we call it a ksuba. But there were places historically, going back to the time of the Gemara, where they didn't actually write a document. It wasn't written at all. Yeah.
In 2021, if somebody has a ksuba, is that basically what it's saying?
That what?
Is any dowry back and forth thing still?
So what the ksuba records, and it's the same ksuba we've been using for thousands of years, like we have a 2,000-year-old ksuba that we can compare it to. What the ksuba basically records is, yes, the financial obligations he takes upon himself for her, as well as all the husband's other obligations that he has related to her care and support. That's what the ksuba records.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So the Gemara now pivots from Shabbos, because the thinking is, well, we've spent quite a bit of time about Shabbos. Well, what about Yom Tov? What about having relations for the first time on Yom Tov? Why don't we have that conversation? And the assumption here is that there may be a malacha which would prohibit for Shabbos, but we might have a leniency for Yom Tov. Tell me something. Why might we have a leniency for a malacha on Yom Tov? What can you think of cases in which we permit something on Yom Tov that's not allowed on Shabbos?
Ochel nefesh.
Right. So Ochel Nefesh would be one example. If you're looking at the sheet that I sent out, and you flip to the reverse of the sheet, to source Aleph, it's a pasuk in Parshas Bo, very relevant since Pesach is coming soon, where the Torah says, Uvayom HaRishon Mikra Kodesh, the first day shall be holy, Uvayom HaShvi'i Mikra Kodesh Yalachem, and the seventh day shall be holy for you. Kol malacha lo yeyosev ahem. No malacha shall be done on those days. Ach, however, asher yeyachel l'chol nefesh, that which is eaten for everyone, hu levado yeyosev lachem, only that shall be done for you. And that is the origin of the idea that one is allowed to engage in malacha that produces food, certain malachas that produce food, on Yom Tov. That's the concept of Ochel Nefesh. What is that going to have to do with this, with our discussion? Why should that permit initial relations on Yom Tov? So that doesn't seem to be at all a clear connection. But we're going to see that that's indeed a possibility. Just wait. The other principle is the principle of Mitoch. right? That's the other possibility. I see some people here who are in the Beit Sashir on Thursday nights when I used to give that. And we discussed Mitoch way, way back when. I looked in my notes. It's 2014 or so. So it's been a while. But have no fear. It's a Gemara in Beit Hadaf Yud Beis Amud Aleph, and it's source Beis on the source sheet. I think, did everyone have the source sheet?
Yeah.
Okay, so some people have it and some people do not have it. So I think what I'm going to do is call it up on the Bar Ilan so that make sure that everybody's able to look at this Gemara, because it's a key Gemara in order to understand where any of this is going. So let me share that. Those who have it on the source sheet have the benefit of the punctuation that I added. It is opening here. Okay. Here's the Mishnah, the top of Beitza Yud Beis Amud Aleph. Beis Shammai Omrin, Ein Motziin Loas HaKatan V'Loas HaLulav V'Loas HaTsefer Torah L'Rishus HaRabim. On Yom Tov, Beis Shammai says, you are not allowed to transport a child, you are not allowed to transport a lulav, you are not allowed to transport a Sefer Torah out into the public domain. And if you see Rashi on the side, kol mili delav tzarech achila. Anything that is not in order to provide food, you're not allowed to transport it on Yom Tov. If it's food, sure, go ahead. Transport food on Yom Tov, that's ochel nefesh. If it's not food, forget it, Beis Shammai says. Ubeis Hillel matirin. And Beis Hillel says, no, you're allowed to transport the kid, you're allowed to transport the lulav, you're allowed to transport the Sefer Torah. All of that is fine. What in the world is Beis Hillel talking about? Why should that be so? So that takes us into the Gemara. Tani Tana Kamei of Yitzhak Bar Avdimi. A Tana taught, meaning not a Tana Mishnah, but it was taught in front of Rabbi Yitzhak Bar Avdimi. Hashochet Olas Nidava B'Yom Tov Loke. If you shecht a karban ola that you brought voluntarily on Yom Tov, you get malkos. Okay? Why would you get malkos? Why would somebody get malkos for shechting this karban on Yom Tov? They're allowed to shecht an animal in order to eat it. Why is it that shechting an ola should be different?
Ola's not eaten.
Ola's not eaten.
Burnt.
Correct.
Fully burnt.
Correct. So since you're not going to eat it, malkos. So was taught in front of Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avdimi. Amar Lei, Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avdimi says back, Da Amar Lochmani, who told you that? Who says that you're not allowed to shecht this Olas Nedava? Beis Shammai hi. That's Beis Shammai's view. Da Amri lo Amrinan mitoch shehutra hotza letzarech hutra nami shelo letzarech. That's because Beis Shammai does not accept the principle of mitoch as seen in our Mishnah regarding transport. Di Beis Hillel, because if you were to look at Beis Hillel, Ha'amri mitoch shehutra hotza letzarech hutra nami shelo letzarech. Hachanami mitoch shehutra shechita letzarech hutra nami shelo letzarech. So I'm going to stop sharing so I can explain what just happened here in the Gemara. The question arose, can you shecht the karban ola on Yom Tov? And the statement was made, no, you're not allowed to do so. And the argument is that Beis Hillel would allow you to shecht a karban ola on Yom Tov, even though you're not going to be able to eat it. Because looking at the Mishnah, Beis Hillel said, I'm allowed to transport things that are not for food on Yom Tov. I can transport a Sefer Torah on Yom Tov. He's okay with that. Since I'm allowed to transport food, this is the meaning of the line mitoch. Mitoch, because, literally mitoch means as a result of. As a result of the fact that you're allowed to transport food on Yom Tov, you are also allowed to transport other things on Yom Tov. That's the principle we see for Beis Hillel in the Mishnah. And the same thing is true for this karban. That as a result of the fact that you're allowed to shecht in order to have meat to eat on Yom Tov, therefore you're also allowed to shecht a karban on Yom Tov. Does everyone follow? That's the principle of mitoch. Since you can do it for food, you're allowed to do this malacha for other things as well. Got it?
Can you burn the karban or just shecht the animal?
You could even burn the karban. You could even burn the carbon.
Even though you don't benefit from it as a food item.
Correct. You would not be allowed to light a new flame, but you would be allowed to cook it, to burn it on an existing flame, because you're allowed to cook on a flame for food. Therefore, you're allowed to also burn the carbon.
You could add fuel to it, though, correct?
You could add fuel to the existing flame. That's correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That you're allowed to do. So that's the...
Are we talking about an olah for the tzibur or for a yard?
No, personal. It's an olas nedava. It's a voluntary olah. The only olos that are going to be brought for the community are the ones that are actually obligatory on Yom Tov, like the carbon tamid and that kind of thing.
I remember learning in, where there was also machok between Basil and Beit Shammai, I think it was whether or not you could bring the Ola on the first day, or you have the Ola Re'iya.
Right, the Ola Re'iya is...
First day or not.
Right, so the Ola Re'iya is a whole other discussion, but we don't, I'm not going in there with this right now. It's a good question, just not for right now. It will become relevant, eventually, but not in this Masechta, not in this Sugya. So, the Gemara then continues, with this idea of mitoch, the idea that if malacha is going to be permitted for eating, it's also permitted for non-food purposes. Maskif la Rabba. Rabba says, wait a minute. Mimai de Beis Shammai u Beis Hillel baha pligi. You're assuming that that's how come Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel have this disagreement in the Mishnah. Beis Shammai says you're not allowed to carry the kid, the Sefer Torah, the lulav, because just because you're allowed to transport food doesn't mean you can transport other things. And Beis Hillel says you are allowed to. Well, Rabba says, maybe that's not what that's about. Maybe the reason there's a machlokas in the Mishnah is because Beis Hillel believes all the laws of transport don't apply to Yom Tov. There's no such thing as a law prohibiting transport on Yom Tov. Dilma be'eruv v'hotzah l'shabbos vein eruv v'hotzah l'yom tov kamiflagi. Mar savar eruv v'hotzah l'shabbos vein eruv v'hotzah l'yom tov. Mar savar eruv v'hotzah l'shabbos vein eruv v'hotzah l'yom tov. The argument between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai may be that Beis Hillel says the laws of not transporting in a public domain on a Shabbos are Shabbos specific and not about Yom Tov. And after all, I have a pasuk in Yirmiyahu, kitichsiv, velosotziu masami batechem biyom haShabbos. B'Shabbos in biyom tov lo. The Torah says you shall not take objects out of your house on Shabbos, only on Shabbos, but Yom Tov is fine. To which Rabbi Yosef says, that can't be. Rabbi Yosef says, that can't be what the debate is about. You know why? Because what were the cases we mentioned in the Mishnah? What were the cases of transport mentioned in the Mishnah? Right. The cases in the Mishnah were carrying a Torah, carrying a lulav, carrying a child. If you wanted to tell me, if Beis Hillel wanted to tell me that there are no prohibitions against carrying on Yom Tov, what should he have used as an example? Carrying something that has no use whatsoever. Once he mentions items that are somewhat useful, a lulav, a Torah, a small child, right? Assuming you consider small children useful, that's its own discussion. Talk amongst yourselves. But the idea here is that Beis Hillel could have said, and that's where the Gemara goes, the Gemara says, if that was what Beis Hillel meant, then Beis Hillel would have said, you could transport rocks. That would have been a real statement. The fact that he didn't mention that you could transport rocks tells me this was not a conversation about whether you can transport at all on Yom Tov. What Beis Hillel was telling me was that you are allowed to transport for certain needs because you're allowed to transport for the sake of food on Yom Tov. So that's a Gemara in Beitza. What we've seen is just a quick view of a Gemara in Beitza that becomes a lot more complicated than that. And the basic...
Is that a fair and logical thought? Because when we're talking about carrying on Shabbos, the
whole thing is about food, right? From Rishuna Yachid to Rishuna Rabin, they're talking about an ani coming in and food being transported. So wouldn't it be normative to talk about normal things that you would be using on Shabbos, whether it would be food or yontif, whether it be food or there, because the issue is transport?
So you could certainly make that argument. You could. Certainly by mentioning Lulav, I think, you know, Lulav relates to Yom Tov, and Sefer Torah, you need a Sefer Torah to lean on Yom Tov, and the child, because kids are around on Yom Tov. So you're right, you could make the statement, it's just talking about common things. However, by going with the common case, you've left a very bad legal ambiguity. Because you've now opened the door for the idea that it's only permitted if there's a specific need that you're transporting for.
And forgive me, I'll drop it after this, but I don't see the logic of the argument. Because you could say there's certain things that are mooks on Shabbos. You could say, you could say those laws apply, which has nothing to do with transport. You can transport the stuff that you're allowed to touch, but not the stuff that you're not allowed to touch.
Right, so that's where I didn't want to go with it, was the question of Muktzah, because Muktzah and Yom Tov is a whole other parsha. And it's a good one, but it would take us way out of where we're going. So
I'll withdraw the question.
Sorry?
So I will withdraw the question.
Okay. But what the Gemara does, and I gave you a table on the source sheet, the Gemara gives us a debate about how much of a tzorech there must be. Tzorech means a necessity. How great a necessity does there have to be for this item in order to permit me to do the malacha? And there's a major debate between Rashi and Tosfos and the Rambam and others about how to understand this, and that's the table that I gave you. Rashi believes that a malacha that is permitted for the sake of food is permitted for any other purpose as long as there is some need for it. Just like there's some need for a lulav, there's some need for a Sefer Torah, there's some need to carry the child, you need to have some need. I'll give you an application of this. You're leaving shul on Yom Tov. You realize that there's a used tissue in your pocket. Are you allowed to walk home with the used tissue in your pocket? As Rashi is explaining it, the answer is no. You have no need for this item, so therefore you're not allowed to transport it outside. You have to get rid of it before you leave shul. That's the idea. Rashi says that that's a rabbinic requirement. Tosfos also thinks that there is that you have to have a need. However, Tosfos says that's even biblically. The Rambam has a different take altogether. The Rambam points out suggests that transport and lighting a fire are actually different from other malachos, and says when it comes to transport or lighting a fire, you don't need to have any need. Other malachos, you need to have some kind of eating-related need. The more I look at my notes on this, the more I think we'll do better if I don't go into this, because it doesn't actually materially affect our understanding of the sugya. The point for us is this. When we ask the question of why might initial relations be prohibited on Shabbos but permitted on Yom Tov, we have two possible principles to invoke. One, the idea of ochel nefesh, and you'll see how it might be relevant here, even though this is not an act of eating. And number two, the principle of mitoch. Whatever malacha is involved in having relations would be permitted potentially for the purpose of preparing food, and therefore will be permitted here as well. That's the argument we're going to see. I realize this is a little difficult to get right now, but I'm just trying to give the principle before we see it in the Gemara, and then once we see it in the Gemara, it'll be clear.
That'll only work if we're talking about wounding as opposed to building.
Correct.
Correct?
Correct. Okay. So let's see where this goes. Back in the Gemara, sharing the screen with the Gemara again. So we're on Zayin Amud Aleph. Rav Yehuda. Okay, so those who are working from their own Gemara, you are six lines down on Zayin Amud Aleph. Rav Yehuda shara lemivel betchila beyom tov. Rav Yehuda permitted having initial relations on Yom Tov. He said that's okay. Amar of papi mishmei derava. Lo tema beyom tov deshari ha b'shabbes aser. Rav Papi says to him, quoting Rava, you sound like you're trying to say that it's okay on Yom Tov, but not on Shabbos. Don't say that. Duhu adin dafilu b'shabbes nami shari. He says, this was not a Yom Tov psak. This is a statement that there's no malacha involved at all. Mutter on Shabbos, mutter on Yom Tov. Then why did Rav Yehuda say, you're allowed to do it on Yom Tov? Why didn't he say Shabbos? Umaisa shahaya kachaya, because that was the case he was dealing with. He was asked about Yom Tov, therefore he paskined it for Yom Tov. But don't deduce from there what his position is regarding Hilcha Shabbos. That's Rav Papi's statement. However, Rav Papa says no. Don't get confused between Rav Papi and Rav Papa. They're two different people. Rav Papa mishmei derava amar b'yom tov shari b'shabbos asur. Rav Papa said no. That's actually the position. The position is Yom Tov it's allowed, Shabbos it's not allowed. Amar le Rav Papi le Rav Papa. So Rav Papi says to Rav Papa, my daitach, what's your logic in saying that it's okay on Yom Tov and not okay on Shabbos? Mitoch shehutra chabura letzorech, hutra nami shalo letzorech. Is it because you believe that just like you're allowed to wound an animal, you shecht an animal for the sake of food, so too you're allowed to wound in this case, even though it's not a food context? Do you believe that? Ela me'ata, then we should also say, muter lasos mugmor b'yom tov. Dimitoch shehutra havara letzarech, hutra nami shalo letzarech. You should also buy into the idea of mitoch for the law of mugmor. Mugmor always reminds me, every time I see the sugya of Mugmar, reminds me of Shmuelke Bernstein's in New York. Anyone here familiar with Shmuelke Bernstein's? Some? Yes. Okay. So I remember still, as a little kid, when they'd bring like a poo-poo platter out to the table, and they'd have this fire, the sterno, in, you know, and the grate on top of it, and you could put stuff on top of the grate. It made a big impression on me, apparently. That and the mustard. The mustard made a big impression as well. But but that's a mugmar. Mugmar was, they had coals, they'd put some kind of sweet-smelling or good-smelling spices on the coals, and then they would put stuff on top of that, on the grill, on top of that, and it would be smoked with whatever spices that they had, there. They would do it for clothing, they would do it for all sorts of stuff. So the question is, are you allowed to do a mugmar, which was a popular thing to do, on Yom Tov? Well, under mitoch, the answer is sure. I'm allowed to cook things on Yom Tov, putting something on the fire to cook it. Why wouldn't it be allowed to do it for a mugmar? Mitoch is fine. However, Rav Papi apparently is uncomfortable, because Rav Papi says to Rav Papa, you're going to permit initial relations on Yom Tov because of mitoch. Would you allow a mugmar also? Are you really willing to go that far and allow mugmar? Now, I had material on this, but in the interest of time, I think what I'll do is do this the quick way. Rav Papi is not actually saying, I don't believe in mitoch. Tosfos discusses what he's doing here. But basically, he believes that mitoch should be very limited in its application, and should not apply to a case of relations, and should not apply to a case of mugmar. That's what I'll say right now. For those who want to know more about what Rav Papi is doing, look at the Tosfos Ella, and it's a good discussion for another time. But I want to get to the answer before we have to stop shir. So Rav Papa says Yom Tov is okay. Rav Papa says relations on Yom Tov are okay. Rav Papi says, is that because of mitoch? You know, mitoch could lead you to all permit mugmar. How can that be? I don't believe in that. So Amar Lei, so Rav Papa says back to him, Alecha Amar Kra. Ach asher ye ochel lechol nefesh. He says, that pasuk that I quoted to you before from Parshas Bo, that says that whatever people eat can be prepared on Yom Tov, the pasuk says, asher ye ochel lechol nefesh, that which is eaten for everyone, davar hashave lechol nefesh. It's not only permitting eating, it's permitting malacha for anything that is a universally enjoyed thing. Anything that is universally enjoyed, you are allowed to do malacha for it on Yom Tov. Ochel nefesh is not limited to eating. So therefore, the malacha, for the sake of initial relations, is going to be mutter. To which, Amar le Rav Acha braid the Rav le Rav Ashi, the last part of the Gemara. Rav Acha braid the Rav says to Rav Ashi, Ela me'atan is dami lo tzvi bi Yom Tov. So let's say you catch a deer on Yom Tov. Somehow a deer ends up with you on Yom Tov. However that happened. Not everybody eats deer. Not everybody eats venison. Venison's expensive. And it's hard to catch. Ho'el ve'eno shava l'chol nefesh, since not everybody eats it, hachanami da'asur l'mishchate. You're going to tell me you're not allowed to eat it because it's not universal? Amar lei, ana davar hatzorech l'chol nefesh k'amina. He says, I don't mean something that everybody engages in. I mean something that fills a need for everybody. And a deer, at the end of the day, is food. So therefore it is something for everybody. Tzvi tzarech l'chol nefesh hu. He says a deer also is something that everybody would use, everybody would need. So what we end up saying here is that the reason why initial relations would be permitted on Yom Tov, and yet not on Shabbos, is as a function of ochel nefesh. The principle that says I am allowed to prepare food on Yom Tov says I am allowed to perform certain malachos, not all malachos, but certain malachos for any benefit which is universal. If it's a universal benefit, then you'd be allowed to do this. And it was clarified in that Gemara regarding the deer, anything that serves a need which will satisfy or which will be enjoyable to everybody, even if it's not something that everybody engages in all the time. So based on that, initial relations would be permitted. Sorry?
Why isn't a mugmar universal?
So the mugmar was not considered something that everybody did.
This is a big debate on smoking cigarettes, right?
It comes into the smoking cigarettes discussion. It comes into the showering on Yom Tov discussion. This is a big, big parsha. This is one of those topics that's very big.
Something like anointing yourself with oil, is that something you could do on Yom Tov? Because if everybody did it, or that's not something everybody.
So I'm not going to start working on different applications of it because we're at 8:17 and I'm not going to hold everybody. Okay. It's a good question. Email me and I'll be able to address it. But yes, David, to answer your question in the chat, that's what he's saying. He's saying that having relations would be considered shava l'chol nefesh, a type of a pleasure that would be something that is universally enjoyed. Universal doesn't have to be 100% in order for it to count as universal. They're willing to work with a large enough percentage and call it universal. So
Rav Papa and Rav Papi both agree on that?
Yes, that's why Rav Papa is able to give that as his response to Rav Papi. So it appears.
Yeah, Rav Papi agrees with that?
I believe so. Okay. So, alright, so next time they're gonna come back to the Shabbos piece and wrap up the Shabbos discussion and move on to the much easier discussion of Sheva Brachos. That's coming up in the Gemara next. Alright.
Yes, be well.
Shkoyach.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.